name is Neda Ba'ashan. My hometown is Jeddah, Saudi Arabia.
I'm Michelle Schifaletti, and you're listening to Thaqafat. Neda Ba'ashan is an independent entrepreneur, mother, and wife. She is passionate and driven around empowering women to be financially independent and building a strong career. After finishing her bachelor's and master's from Boston, she began her career in investment banking, working in prestigious firms such as HSBC and JP Morgan. After her career in the finance industry, Neda opened a multi-brand boutique 13 years ago in Jeddah called The Huntress, which has grown to become one of the most successful in Saudi Arabia. She now also has a small concierge service for VIP clients. After her marriage pictures went viral, she grew to social media fame and began using the platform to promote her business. Neda promotes positive change and an image of a strong working mother and woman. She loves traveling and has explored over 55 countries. She is constantly looking for her passions of fashion, beauty, culture, and travel, and taking her followers along for the ride. Neda, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. So happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you. And it's great because I know, you know, I'm always watching your Instagram TVs. So it's great to turn the camera around and ask you a few questions today.
Yeah, you're interviewing me today for a change.
Yes. So first, tell everyone who you are. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so basically my name is Neda Ba'ashan. I'm Saudi. I live between Saudi and Kuwait because my husband's from Kuwait. I studied in Saudi all my life. Then I went to college in Boston. I did my bachelor's in marketing and PR and my master's in management. Then I moved back to Saudi and I started working in finance. So I was in investment banking for almost 12 years. During that period of time, I actually opened a retail store, which is called Newbury at the time. And then I changed the name to The Huntress. So I always had a love for like fashion and clothes. And I always knew that at heart that I wanted to do something in that field. But at the time, I think the serious job was I had to have that serious job, which was like, you know, banking. So that was my main job. During that phase, I actually went around. I was living in Bahrain. I was living in Riyadh and Jeddah. I was doing a lot of like working in different firms. And after that, I decided to open my store like after 2 years in banking. And I kept the store as a side job until it became something that was actually worth it. I didn't even know that one day it will actually be a main business for myself. So after like 12 years in banking, I was like, you know what? I've had enough. I don't think it's like where I want to be in the next 10 years. So yeah. I decided to leave. The store became more of an income for me. It became more of a like a better income and that I could actually leave my job. But then when I wanted to leave my job, I realized that, okay, I know how to buy for a small boutique and a small retail company, but I don't know how to buy or understand this on a bigger level. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what's my experience in retail? I have experience in numbers and finance and investments, yes, but this doesn't mean I have managing skills because I was always like, I was not like, obviously at that age, I always had a manager and I was like an RM, a relationship manager, but I never managed people properly and I never understood retail on a much bigger scale, the buying process. So I started thinking, where am I going to work? Where would I go? Like, you know, at that time, until today, there aren't a lot of department stores in Saudi and most of the boutiques in Saudi are owned by individuals who want to do the job themselves, so they won't hire. So I found this company called Etter, which is Etter Department Stores, and I actually worked for them as a buyer for men's, women's, kids, and homeware. And during that period, like you're buying for a full department store mm-hmm. and supermarket, so I actually traveled, you can say, I swear to you, the world. I've even been to China, and I understood how it is to understand what budgets are like, how budgets are made and the type of buying, of course, what's buying, you know, how do you understand the market? Of course, I was always buying for a niche market, mm-hmm. a certain caliber and style of woman that bought for me. But then I understood how to buy on a bigger scale. And after working with them for 3 years, I just decided to work for myself. But I have to admit that what got me, I think, a lot of people that are in retail or in the fashion business in Saudi are very, like, you know, artsy, not good with the number background. I started off differently. I started off with a number background and I just like to dress up. And I feel the banking process and the banking field has really helped me have the ethics work that I don't think I would have had if I just started in fashion, you know? So I worked in HSBC, I worked in the Saudi French Bank, I worked in the family office in Bahrain, mm-hmm. which is a wealth advisory firm. So the transition was very different from this field to fashion, but there's one thing that I always had in common between those two, which is that I always loved people and dealing with people. So instead of dealing with clients for for wealth advisory, I dealt with clients for shopping. So yeah. It just transitioned to a field that I liked, but I still had the whole customer relation and client database. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's interesting because your investment banking is such a rigid field, I feel like. And, you know, fashion is seen as something as super creative and artsy, but it's true. You know, a lot of the background in terms of buying is so numbers based. Talk a little bit about kind of the landscape when you did decide to open your business. What was it like for you?
To be honest, at the time when I was in banking, I was in a very serious job. And as much as I didn't love it at heart, I actually have to admit that I was like, it was prestige. You know, I graduated in 2005. So in 2005, there were very few women in corporate banking. And I was the only girl with two other women who were like 10 years older than me in the whole office. So to me, like, and my father, I think my father's dream was to be a banker. So he kind of instilled that dream in me, which was so not my dream. But I realized, you know something, it was such a prestigious job. I was in a very good position. I was paid very well. So at the time, that's what I really thought I should do, because that was, you know, that was the norm. When I graduated in 2005 in Saudi, the positions that were available were more like hospitals, education, banking, certain sectors, certain like even departments, not sectors. So there wasn't a lot of variety. And I studied PR, but the PR companies at the time were all Lebanese. And my father really urged me to go to a firm that's like a that's well known, like HSBC has a good name, yeah. They'll train you. And then I just opened the store I had money that I saved. You know, as a kid growing up, I don't know if you lived in Riyadh, there's always an idea. So every month I would always accumulate, like I always saved that money and I always bought stocks, you know. And I remember the first business I had, I sold those stocks and my dad helped me out with a bit of money like here, but 80% was like from my stock money. So he told me, you need to feel that you're going to actually lose something to actually work hard for it. So I sold the stocks, opened a very small store. The concept was just basically a fun store that has all the American brands that I studied in Boston. So there was a street called Newbury Street, which had all the cool and cute boutiques, which was something we never really had in Saudi, the cottons, the casual wear. And that was what I wanted to have in Saudi. But then I realized that the market, because the dollar versus the riyal, when you come back and you land, it's a very big difference in the price point. And people would not want to shop. At the time, online was not very common to shop. But this is how it started. It was a fun concept. Wasn't really making a lot of money the first 2 years because I was experimenting and learning on my own. I lost money, I made money, and then I paid it again. And so it was, honestly, I feel like it was I was self-taught how to do this on my own. I don't think there was a direction or, you know how they tell you have a business plan? Mm-hmm. Like I had nothing. Like this is why I advise people to do that.
Yeah, but I feel like sometimes it's the trial and errors of an entrepreneur. Yeah.
I agree. And this is how you learn. Like now I would never make the stupid mistakes. I think I'll tell you something. In the beginning of my career, I felt that I was such an emotional buyer. I'd buy what I feel is nice or what I like. I never looked at it around me. And then I started going to events and I started paying attention to how people dress up and buy. I'm not the majority. I'm the minority. Mm. So I started buying differently. And that's when I started realizing that you should never be an emotional buyer. And most people in this field are driven by fashion and the scene. And it is very superficial, like this whole world. Like I remember, I'm not going to lie, I was on an airplane once and someone asked me, what do you do after I left banking? And I said, I was supposed to say that I, you know, work in fashion. And then I said, I'm in finance. And then my sister was like, you were so embarrassed to say that you're in fashion. And I was like, I'm not used to it. You know, it's perceived as very shallow at the time, for me at least, you know?
And I think what you said before is so true. Like there's this perception that people who are in fashion are either, they just want to go take pictures of themselves or they're just artsy, but there's such a huge business. I mean, think about even brands that are now coming to the Middle East or brands that are trying to expand themselves in the GCC area or even just in Saudi. I mean, it's a huge market behind it.
it's a huge market. And not just that, like I think the perception of fashion is shallow because people think it's just taking pictures and a fashion show. I think the job starts after the buying itself. Like, okay, now we got the clothes, we did the fashion show. It's like the whole process of, I never did the fun side because I always went to the showrooms and the exhibitions and the big trade shows. And that was where I had to actually do my job, which is basically doing the buying, sourcing new brands. And I always tried to find upcoming brands that were not easily accessible online, because then I would not be able to compete with the margins of the big websites like Shopbop or Net-a-Porter. Yeah. So the Huntress is at the moment is not trying to be like another famous website. We don't want to mimic. We want to be this like indie bohemian website that has all these like brands you don't find anywhere, and you find like a nice boutique in Soho in New York. That's what I want. But for example, Middle East style won't fit, like, for example, the majority, but, you know. So I learned a lot along the way. And you want me to talk about my switch to Instagram?
Yeah, I was going to say, so, you know, you talked a little bit about kind of how the Huntress has developed. So now talk a little bit about, I mean, you have a huge following on social media. How did that kind of come? So we're moving from investment banking to you building this amazing business. And now, you know, you having a huge following on Instagram.
That's really funny. I actually never thought of myself as an influencer. I didn't even know that there's a word called influencer. I didn't even think it was a job. So basically, I remember in Saudi Arabia at the time, the market was very, when I got married, and the market was a bit down. And I had a big account for my store, which was called The Huntress. And when I got married, all my wedding pictures went viral. And they started saying that, like, I'm a billionaire and my husband's a billionaire. And that, like, I'm like 10 years older than him. And they started coming up with, like, he's from a different family name and I'm from a different family. It was just so dramatic. But I woke up that morning and my store account grew by like around 50K from the amount of Snapchat. I don't know how it went. It was so funny.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even an account under my name. I didn't have an account that was public. And then I was like, you know what, when they say there's any publicity is good publicity, let me change the Huntress account to fashion and open a new account for the Huntress, because I did personal shopping and buying as well. Mm-hmm. So let me start switching this to that, and I'm going to open another one for the Huntress. And I did. In the beginning, I started it off as sharing stories of Saudi girls having small businesses. So I would go to all these small firms and businesses in Saudi and talk about what they do. I never understood the concept of having a profile or being a brand ambassador. None of that. Like, I even hated taking pictures. And then I said, if I'm actually going to do it, I'm going to actually do it right. And if I don't succeed in a year, I'm going to close the account. I don't think that I either do something properly or I just don't have the time for it. So in the beginning, I made it very like, I spoke about business, how I started my career, how I switched from banking to this, and it was a nice story. But then I realized, like, no, Instagram people are all visual. They don't always want to listen. You know, this is for a podcast. So I was like, no, it's not really. And then I met someone in Dubai, and I went to Dubai for a meeting, and they're like, you know, Neda, you're a very educated person, but you need to show what you're about through images. And I'm like, how? And then they were like, you need to start taking better pictures. You need to take proper pictures. Your profile is your image to brands. And I'm like, and I never got a lot of work in the beginning because people thought I was just like a businesswoman and stuff. In the end, I started like taking pictures properly. I started getting approached by brands for campaigns. I always never wanted to take a million campaigns. I always wanted to take campaigns that really fit me because I'm very, you know, honestly, this is not my main job.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be something that I like. And today I actually did a campaign for a cream I actually really use. So I enjoyed marketing things I actually believe in.
Yeah,
I'm very into skincare, extremely. I think in another life I would have been a dermatologist. So I see so much damage that's done with plastic surgery here in this part of the world and many other parts of the world. So I was like, let me start hosting nice doctors just to talk about it. And it started during quarantine because the doctor that like gave birth to my son was like, let's have an awareness campaign about breast cancer and talk about women's issues after birth, which is a very sensitive topic to talk about what women, how like the plastic surgery you can do after birth for women, you know? So it's like women want to ask, but don't want to ask. They're shy when they go to a doctor.
It's a bit taboo to talk about.
And it was a very medical live, and it was so interesting because you cannot imagine the amount of interest that was from this live. And I was like, you know what? I should really do this. I just love the process of having someone on my platform talking about a useful topic. Mm-hmm. Because I always said I cannot entertain every day. I have a very basic life. I go to work, I go to the gym, I have an interview here and there, but I'm not like someone that has drama or any. I'm not so exciting every day. So why not use this formal, this public platform as a way to gain more of an audience through relevant topics that I can never be the person that I'm not a jack of all trades. So let's get a doctor, let's get a therapist, let's get someone in marketing. So we switch the topics and get people from different fields. Mm-hmm. And what I loved is that after the first time, I got another one and another one. And after that, people started telling me, Neda, we wait for your life. It was quarantine. It was Ramadan.
Yeah.
And everybody started telling me, your account is really good. We love your account because it's useful. It's not just so shallow. It's a bit of everything. It's health. It's lifestyle. It's getting really good caliber of people. Not just any doctors. Like the doctors I'm getting are really up there. I got the Kardashian doctor. I emailed them. I'm like, you know something? There's a big following in the Middle East and we would love to have you on my platform. Are you interested? And they're like, yeah, for sure. And then slowly, I started making a list. I made a wish list of whoever I want on my account. And I would wait if someone would give me a date, like in March. I'd be like, sure, I'll wait. I would schedule it in March, email them again. Uh-huh. And slowly, I started getting this good, like I had like more than now 50 lives or more. And a good caliber of people. So now I have a good name in terms of like she hosts proper people with very good info. Yeah. And this is what I'm enjoying a lot about my Instagram. So between the profile images and I feel my content now is the lives. And of course the pictures, I try to work with a lot of local photographers and the art people that do art direction to create nice pictures when I can, you know, at the moment. But
I think there's an authenticity though to it, right? Because I mean, obviously I've talked a lot about influencer marketing. There's like a huge saturated market in influencer. We recently had Najude on the platform who is great. And she was talking a lot about kind of what is influencer marketing and how it's affected kind of the region in general. But I think what's great about your platform is, you know, you said you're not a jack of all trades, but in a sense you kind of are because you're offering something new to the market and, you know, having real authentic, deep conversations, not just a shallow conversation about like, oh, so, you know, you look so nice today. You're having real conversations that are based in things that maybe people are wondering, but aren't ready to ask.
No, I agree. Like I always used to say in the beginning, for me to get the numbers that everybody wants on Instagram, I had to be either silly, I have a scandal, or it has to be very sexual. Honestly, to be very honest, yeah. To have views, you need to have one of these three, silly, scandal, or sexy. Mm-hmm. I find it very hard, like all the educational accounts or people that have very like strong, deep accounts don't have big numbers. Mm-hmm. Think about it.
Yeah.
It's the ones that are in bikinis and these are the ones that are getting a lot of, and that you get more hits. It's a fact. But then again, I started thinking it's not about the number at the end of the day. It's about the quality of following. And that's what matters. But I'm going to be very honest. I studied marketing in college and my master's is also partly in communications. Marketing back then has changed so much now. Like I graduated in 2005. So basically I feel like I'm a dinosaur when it comes to what I studied in marketing versus what's happening in the world right now. But I will not deny that influence, because I have a business and I have stores. Like a lot of people, I see a lot of people in marketing and they always say, influencers don't make a difference and this. And I agree that many don't for the field you're trying to market. Like for example, if you're a dentist, and you just get a pretty face and she markets, doesn't mean you're going to get clients because she's not the right person to market. I feel the person you choose has to fit the business type you're trying to sell. In addition to the fact that an oversaturated marketer, an influencer that over markets cannot produce the sale amount anymore. I also believe you should start focusing on the smaller influencers because they have more engagement.
Yeah.
And they're more closer to their followers. And I have been, I as a business have been using influencers as well, not my, because I'm at the end of the day, I can't talk about my store every day.
Yeah.
And I've been noticing there is an increase in sales, depending of course on each influencer. Of course it has to do with the price point. It also depends on how she films. It just needs to be really studied, but to get to a wider demographic nowadays, TV doesn't really work. Newspapers don't really work.
Yeah.
It's the easiest platform to to, you know, to share. So it does make a difference, but it has to be studied, you know.
How do you feel like the landscape in Saudi in particular has changed since you first opened the Huntress? In terms of the fashion industry, the business industry, how has it kind of affected your business personally?
Okay, so basically when I first started in Saudi, when I started my store, the style was so different. Let me be very honest with you. Saudis have always been into fashion since I can remember. Yeah. Since I was a kid, like everybody's into clothes. Everybody, I think it's the main thing. It's like clothes, shoes, bags. But back in the day, the bag and the shoe were the outfit because we always wore the abaya. Mm-hmm. And then the transition from, let's say from 99 until now, the abayas are colored. They're purple. They're green. They're yellow. Riyadh only until like 4 years ago wore black and navy. Now they're wearing beige and purple and white. There's a lot of openness in terms of how women are expressing their fashion sense. The outfit now is a full look. The abaya has a full, it's a style. Like sometimes, you know, I actually miss it when I'm in Kuwait here and I'm not wearing it. They have the pants with the top, with this, the abaya is done like a blazer. The winter coats now in Riyadh in the winter, I'm sure when you know it gets cold, are all done with fur. There's a lot of involvement in attention to detail now on things that nobody really looked at before. People just wanted to get warm before and wear a shawl or like wear a thick thing. And no, now it's a statement piece. The restaurants are filled with people with such nice, people are really nice looking. Back in the day, you go to the restaurant, you're covered and it's like an outing now.
Yeah.
And not just that, loungewear and tennis shoes, and this is something that it was never like back in the day in like 99 and 98. If you wear tennis shoes and you're out, they're like, where are you going to the gym?
Yeah,
nobody understood that the sneaker was part of an outfit. It has changed. Like who wears heels when they're out in the mall? No one. Like you hardly find one person. Comfort versus comfort and leisure like took over the whole glamour, and that became also glamorous in its own certain way. Did you ever think you'd go out in joggings back in the day with a nice coat and a hoodie? Unless you were like probably in the States, you'd think everybody like, oh, the States, they're so casual. But in Europe, even Europe now has become more casual than before.
Yeah. Okay, tell me a little bit about, so you love interviewing people. You talked a little bit about your Instagram lives. Talk about your podcast. So okay. I know you're starting a podcast. Share with us about your podcast on this podcast.
Okay, so basically after doing the lives, I kept on getting so many questions from people. They're like, why don't you have a podcast? And I was like, what's a podcast? I didn't even know what a podcast was. My husband loves podcasts and he always listens to them. So then I asked him, what do you think? Do you think it's, he's like, of course, it's a very good idea because not everyone's going to take their Instagram and just open your IGTV. And they're going to, honestly, IGTV, when it's not on the main page, people have to scroll down or go. So on the podcast, it's just there. So what I did is that I downloaded all my interviews on the podcast, and this is a start. And then when I go forward, I'm going to start doing the interviews maybe on my podcast, then posting it on Instagram or something of the sort. We're figuring it out now, but we'll do all the interviews on Instagram, and then we'll actually on a podcast. And I've had a lot of good people on the live, so it would be really nice to actually just save these things, not just on one platform.
It's great for people to listen to while they're walking. Well, I mean, I always listen to podcasts when I'm working out. What would you say is like the common thread? If you could say, you know, what is your podcast about in a nutshell? What would you say?
It's a lot about beauty. I'm not going to lie to you. I've tried to do other topics, but it seems that beauty is always something that women are always seeking. I've had the biggest digital marketer. I've had people from different fields. Not everyone wants to really hear about business like advice on an Instagram. I think they have, it's not the main platform for it, but I've noticed they just love interviewing or meeting doctors. Mm-hmm. They're really into the whole meeting all these famous doctors abroad and talking about the new procedures. So this is something I've been doing, but I can't really, honestly, it's only been 8 months.
Yeah.
So give you exactly what it's about, but at the moment you can say the majority of my interviews are doctors. So I don't know, it's just like it's a mixture of interviewing, let's just say, great people or very interesting
people. A great interviewer, by the way. When I listen to your Instagram lives, it's great, and I think it's great because you can interview, you don't have to be confined necessarily. Like if you meet somebody who, you know, you find interesting outside of the beauty industry, you can also have
Exactly. I don't want to like narrow it down to one subject. Then I get very tied and just, I'm just always looking for one field. So I'd rather not, rather just keep it open.
Everyone's always searching for beauty tips though. And I think when it's a doctor, people say like, okay, you know, they know. So
they know that, but you'd be surprised. Like, you know, when I interview doctors from the States, like from New York, and then I interview France, they have such different ideas about what works and what doesn't, because the American medical system versus the European medical system, the FDA in the US and France is totally different. So the doctor in the States would be like, never and ever would I do that. And the doctor in France, they're like, yeah, they're very late. They don't have this procedure. That's why they say it's not good. And it's funny how you keep hearing different. And you know something, all my interviews, you hear doctors contradicting each other, but this doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means that each one has his own opinion. But it's really nice, and it's actually been very fun, because I'm meeting a lot of exciting people. Like now I'm meeting you. Yeah. So when I come to New York, I'll definitely see you. Definitely. And when I'm on my lives, I've made so many nice new friends and people that I met on this platform. And you know, everybody talks sometimes about the negativities of Instagram, and I always say it's what you make of it.
I agree with that. And I think, you know, any of these new platforms, it's such like, I'm in New York right now and you're in Kuwait and we're having a conversation as if we're sitting next to each other. There's such, I mean, social media, everything has its ups and downs, but
exactly.
I think
like life has its ups and downs, every field, and there's nothing perfect. And you know, sometimes a lot of people belittle certain things, but you know, social media, I have to admit, in my field, my business, I'm finding so many nice, exciting brands from Colombia, from Brazil, from Canada, through social media, not through the trade show, because I go to 2 trade shows a year, say 3, but I'm accessing this platform daily, and I will always find something exciting. Yeah. I decided to start activewear in my store. We're going to start a full line of activewear, all from the States, by the way. All the brands are US-based.
Awesome.
And it's exciting because I buy all my activewear from the US. And then I was like, you know what? Why don't I create? I know there's a lot of websites that have it, but why don't I create a platform that has my favorite things on my website, The Huntress? Yes. So I'm so excited about that, and I thank social media because I found the nicest and coolest brands. Mm-hmm. So it's a double sword in ways. I never cared about fame, to be honest. When I was on social media, to me, it was never about fame. It was just because I wanted to have I wanted to be a side of my business. I wanted to just push my business. I never thought that I would be famous. I kept thinking that I'm just pushing my store, but not every account is exciting and not every influencer is useful. Exactly. And it's something we should accept. It's like everything. It's not every movie is a good movie.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to ask you, we have a signature question here on this podcast, and that's, what does culture mean to you? Because I think everything that we discussed today is related in some capacity to culture. So what does culture mean to you?
Culture to me is identity. That's exactly what it is. Like, no matter where you go, if you live in, I lived in the States for so long and I come, but it's always, you have that thing, that identity that you belong to, and which that's part of your culture. It's history. That's what I feel the word culture means to me. It's not really one thing. It's just that it's the story of where I'm from, my heritage, you know, that's to me what culture is.
Nada, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
Today. It was a pleasure having you.
Same here. Well, nice. And maybe I should interview you on my life to talk about why you came up with Thaqafat.
I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. I love Nada's mission about promoting and empowering women. And you can really tell from speaking to her that she really believes in this and really embodies what that mission is all about. If you'd like to follow Nada, you can hear some of her amazing Instagram lives and all of the content that she posts at Nada Baishan on Instagram. You can also follow her brand and boutique, The Huntress, at the_Huntress on Instagram. And until next time, when we continue to connect to the culture, Masarama.